Hi, everyone, and welcome to a new edition of the OPC Foundation podcast, the home of industrial interoperability. My name is Peter Seeberg, and I'm your host. Today, I'm going to be talking to Tom Schneider from Trumpf about the OPC way for machine tools companion specification, which was initiated and coordinated by the German Machine Tool Builders Association, VDW. Tom is going to be talking and telling us which scope and use cases the companion specification addresses and what they have achieved so far. So let's go for it. Hello, Tom. Thanks for joining. How are you?
Hi, Peter. Thanks for inviting me here to talk about this interesting and for the machine tool business disruptive idea of OPC-UA connectivity. So I'm very happy to be here.
Disruptive, that's a word I'm going to come back to just in a second. But we should start with me asking you to introduce yourself to our listeners. Tell a bit about yourself, about your employer, Trumpf, about Trumpf's involvement today with OPC technology and the OPC Foundation.
Yeah, thanks for getting the opportunity to introduce the great company of Trumpf and especially the machine tools division, which is part of the 100 years, which we celebrated last year of Trumpf technology, a family-owned high technology company. We provide machine tools for sheet metal processing and cutting, bending, and welding, as well as laser, industrial laser sources, and electronics and special sources for lasers, which are used in the semicon industry. So I would say we are one of the champions in Europe with regards to technologies, and we have to disrupt ourselves. That is one of the key objectives, being disruptive for solutions, high technology solutions for the next generations to come. And we combine this with light sources, in our case with laser light, to cut sheet metal. So it's a very interesting space, and especially for machine tools, we have the special situation that we provide the machines, the software, and the services, which fits perfectly together in solutions for our customers. And our customers are mainly family-owned businesses, all distributed around the world, as well as big OEMs who produce parts and sheet metal for cars, for trains, for rockets, but also for buildings. So sheet metal is a unique material, which is sustainable and recyclable. So it's a nice environment, but it has to do a lot with digital solutions. And I'm the CTO of this wonderful division, and therefore can talk a little bit about the technology behind.
Very good. Talking about rockets, and about you as a company being 100 years old, I recall it must have been a couple of months ago where, what did you exactly do? I mean, from your laser division, you were pointing a laser into space, and I believe you were trying to find out who was the furthest away person who could see this light beam. Was that what it was exactly?
Yeah, so that was we had this wonderful green laser light which we positioned on the campus in Ditzingen in the first time for celebrating our anniversary. And we asked over the social medias and normal media to the people to connect and give us a feedback who could see the laser light from the greatest distance in Baden-Württemberg in the land. But also this laser source then got on to travel from side to side, though, from Ditzingen to the Netherlands. So it's a part of a journey across the globe.
Was there a number? What was the furthest away that people could see the laser beam?
Actually, I didn't remember, but it was with quite a huge distance compared to what I've expected. So, but I don't have the detail.
Very good.
We get very good feedback around. Yeah.
We're not going to be talking about a second thing before we move into our topic of today, but I have read, and when I did think, I did prepare, I mean, paper part is a thing that maybe we talk about later, but how I then got in to see that you are a co-author as well. And I assume it has everything to do with the big word disruptive. In German, it's called Umdenken. as a service. Maybe it's being called Rethinking as a Service. I don't know. The question is that a book that you co-authored that is available in English as well, or only in German?
No, it will be available in English, and we started to produce an ebook, but it will take a couple of days. But I will directly post it on LinkedIn once it is available as an English version. As of today, it is only the German version, and it's in a paper version available.
Very good. So let's start our topic for today with I'm going to ask you for a more general introduction. You know, you have been actively involved as a company in developing standards, pushing ecosystems. Maybe it has all to do with the same term that you started this discussion with, disruptive, I don't know. But what I want to know, and you've been doing this together with partners, please share us your Trump's position on being open, on interfacing, working with others rather than being closed and hiding information.
Yeah, so I would say it is non-typical, based on the history, that we co-create and we are being open. So I would say that is the part of the disruptive. So we think our position, but from the perspective of a customer and from the perspective of the customer need, especially with the growth ambition of most of our customers to be connected in supply chains, being connected in the networks of partners, and to avoid any interface which is hindering smart processes. I would say that was in the history, we started this 7 to 8 years ago, where we saw that our position of trying to solve everything in a Trump-related ecosystem will not work any further. So, and therefore, in the history of the last 8 years, we had several ideas. First, we had startups outside our core business to drive digitalization. But over the time, we have learned that at the end, it is a key transformation from the internal, so starting from the machine, but building up an open ecosystem out of the core of our technology. So that was a fundamental mindset change. And when we started this, we also started the discussion within our association. And that was also the beginning of Umati, where we had to make sure that there is no differentiation for everybody if everybody solves different or the same topic differently. At the end, it drives customer complexity, which is hindering us to be successful. And that was, I would say, the starting point of this journey. And some of the partners which we joined early, some of the hyperscalers, but also local companies and automation, all these connect to different partners, and strong customers brought us a little bit more in this position that we have to rethink our positioning. And we came up with the openness of being willing to integrate different technologies from different partners without doing specific customization engineering work, because each project is not as powerful in, I would say, value add generations that we can solve it individually. And that was a key driver. It's just also a question of pricing in the market and getting more and more systems out, because that was, at the end, the wish of our customer: please solve the process in my factory. So I have to integrate your technology into my processes. And that was, and that is still, the key driver of openness.
Now, openness brings us directly to the combined word of open source. And just thinking back on what you just said, and we said, you know, 100 years old company, yes. And I can very well imagine that the first 90, or you say, you know, minus the first or the last 8 years, 92 years, you know, things typically were closed. And I'm going to ask you about your perspective with regards to open source. I only think back of when I was at one of the, you know, OPC UA toolkit providers, Softing. And I think at that time, 7, 8 years back, it was when the OPC Foundation decided they were going to go open source, and what that did to the environment. You know, some people were, including myself, flabbergasted, oh, what is happening right now? So And I must say, I have still been, what is the right way of saying it? It hasn't been always that easy for me understanding. So I'm going to ask you, what is your argumentation, I guess, along the lines of what you just said, for Triumph being a publisher of open source solutions?
So I had the luck that before joining Triumph 8 years ago, I was working in the aerospace industry, and we worked a lot globally connected, because on the airplane level, it's an integration of a lot of suppliers bringing high-tech technology to one of the airframe manufacturers. And you had to share things to make systems work. So I'm coming from the systems engineering, and I was the director of flight control. So, and when the CTO in these days hired me, he said, okay, please bring your expertise in systems engineering, but don't let our machines fly, because that might be too expensive for machine tools to be affordable. But as I have been a systems engineer with a stick to surface, so that was a starting point where we redefined our solution scope to our end customers. So we said, okay, it's a machine, it's a software, it's a service. It has to be connected vertically on the one hand side. So we would like to vertically integrate. And on the other side, we as Triumph, we would like to connect at least three process steps. So it's cutting, bending, and welding, which is horizontally in the factory. And there are other steps to come, or pre-production processes before this horizontal start of cutting, bending, and welding. With this framework of getting a vertical and horizontal integrated factory, that was the starting point where I said, okay, this complexity, this solution space we have to drive is too big that we can afford it by ourselves. So we have to integrate partners. We have to integrate solutions. So that was, I would say, the first step into an openness. But then, and on top of that, in the last years, the speed in technology, the speed in software development, the need of global access of talents to come into our company and to bring this excellence in parts, I would say this also additionally drove us to open source parts to make sure that we could leverage the community, the knowledge which is available, and then to bring this to a customer benefit. So I think it's a journey, though, therefore a little bit also with the book you mentioned at the beginning, it's a rethinking. It's rethinking the position from us being an excellent technology provider, but on top of that, being an integrator for the purpose of our customers. So we are the integrators for our customers, because our customers trust in us. We are family owned. They trust in us. They have the loyalty to us. So they depend that we move fast enough that they can use our products in the best way.
Right. Maybe similar to in the past, the airplane builder integrating the hundreds, if not thousands, of technology providers. Is that the similarity, I guess? Or
yeah. Yeah, it's a huge puzzle. If you look into the shoes of our customers, an autonomous factory in sheet metal, it's a huge puzzle. You need so many bits and pieces. And for us as an OEM with a huge engineering workforce, so we have over 1,000 engineers, so it's a huge workforce, but it's not enough to solve every bits and puzzle piece by ourselves. We would need 2,000-3,000 engineers, and we will not be able to earn enough money to hire 3,000 engineers at our revenues and the market share. So it was also, I would say, it's the one thing is an intellectual understanding that openness helps, but on the other side, it's also a business logic that it's also needed to provide the perfect solution.
Moving towards the core of our podcast, OPC Foundation, OPC Experts Podcast, how does what you've just shared with us, how does that relate to OPC UA? How have you come to, and why did you then decide to go for OPC UA as a technology?
As I mentioned, it started even before us, because I have to mention it from the historic point of view. I joined 2016, but there have been quite some very smart and talented young engineers the days before, which started an internal strategy project to see, okay, what are the technologies available in the market and how to manage these interfaces especially initially in the Trump space. And that was 2006. We decided that we have to rethink our strategy. Then there were some of the crises. The guys who remember, maybe in these days, we had the first crisis 2008. And after 2010, we did a real focus on scanning the market, looking for solutions which we don't have to buy, which are open and therefore independent. And then in 2015 and 16, we decided on an internal expert group with connected to OPCOA. So it was right with the beginning of my work here in Trumpf. And I remember that at the beginning, it was a challenge. We had to bring every engineer, every group leader of the different sides of the different departments to this. And the initial office was linked to the CTO, because that was the only way to make sure that every engineer was open enough to at least review the standard and to check how a roadmap from his current solution to an OPCOA-based solution could work out. So it was, I would say it was two. It was a strategic decision to do so. It was an implementation of an expert group linked to the office of the CTO, and then everybody had to review his technology roadmaps to come to solutions and present a roadmap to us in the leadership team how to make it happen in this transformation. And we are still working on it. So it's still work in progress. As everybody could imagine, it's a huge portfolio and a lot of work to do.
So although, as we hear, you've been, you know, you and even before you, so the company Trumpf and before you, other young engineers, as you say, have been working with OPCOA for a long time, how is it you would think that nevertheless it has taken a considerable time for the standardization of interfaces based on OPCOA? So is there any special conditions for us to learn about the machine tools industry?
It's a chicken and egg problem. So first of all, you have long development cycles. It typically takes you from an idea to a finalized machine tool. I would say even if you're fast, it takes 2 to 3 years, but sometimes it even takes longer. And then to update control systems and HMIs, overall machine software related product structures, I would even say it would take a decade. So it's by design, it takes longer. And second, because it takes longer, in the brownfield, it even takes longer because the critical mass, you buy one machine, this might have OPCOA, but you have five other machines, they are not linked. So the transformation of the brownfield is, on top of that, I would say, a systematically burden in the industry which takes these digitalization cycles so long. And sometimes there are a lot of startups connecting machines with boxes and so on and so on. But if you do so, you need, for the integration of each of these single solutions, you need project engineering again in brownfield. So it's on top additional cost for the end customer. And therefore, the complexity of this transformation, especially in the brownfield, hinders a little bit the fast digitalization of the industry. But on the other side, I would say the common understanding of all OEMs is now we would like to make sure, and that is a key driver of UMATI and other standardization protocols at the currently, that all the current decision makers in the industry, in the engineering departments, in the services departments, they know the pain of the past, and we would like to avoid this in the future. I would say that is one of the key drivers which now drives us to standard. We would like to keep the standards. We would like to roll out the standards. We would like to make them globally available. That is one of our, that we can build up our business. I would say that is the key.
You refer to the brownfield solutions as well. I do recall from my own job as a market segment manager, we would typically divide between process, which could be, you know, a lifetime of 30, maybe sometimes 40 years, whereas many times in the discrete area, you know, it could be, you know, that after 2, 3, 4 years, if for whatever reason, you know, a new design, car design got out, a new factory would build, what would you say is maybe a typical life cycle of a factory which is heavily, you know, filled with machine tools equipment?
So I would say, so we all have the big factories in mind, like you mentioned, for automotive, but there are thousands of small companies, and these are our core customers, the 80% family-owned business between 2 to 5 million euro of revenue with 4 to 6 machines, I would say 50 to 100 people. And they have machines who are 25 years old and also which are 2 years old. And these are the mixed brownfields which drive the complexity of our solutions. And therefore, I would say in average, maybe it's 10 to 15 years.
Okay, so I think you started talking about some kind of mindset, and it's not only for what you say, these thousands of smaller companies. Typically, the bigger companies, maybe, you know, they go first. But what would you say that this mindset aspect, what is behind it? What experience have you had during this time?
So I would say at the beginning, it was all decided by the perfect precision in the part being processed. So we have been, by definition, centrally product focused on the part to be produced. But with the change now, with these integration into ecosystem, integration into ERP systems, integration into production planning, production preparation, the new requirements of getting feedback back to the leading planning systems, getting feedback back to the quality systems. This changed also the competence distribution within our company. So software on the machine side, software on the intermediate layer becomes more and more important. And this is what I would say, this is one of the key drivers of bringing in a new mindset. People who know that you have to have your eye on the open source development in the communities. Where's the speed up? Where are new solutions available? How to deal with all questions of security? And one of the, I would say, key drivers in all this aspect is the time synchronicity. So once you come to intermediate layers and data being sended into on shop floor level, on factory level, but even on the machine level, you have to make sure that the time synchronicity is given, because otherwise from remote or from outside, you cannot understand the correlation of the digital and the physical world. So these are all aspects which on the one hand side drives the complexity of our product, but on the other side open up new ideas on products which we had not had before. So it's both.
So far, we've mainly talked about, I believe, considerations from an industry, maybe also machine builders, your Trumpf perspective, right? So what about your customers' perspective?
I would say there are two kind of customers, as I mentioned now. The family-owned customers, they would like to follow our guidance, I would say, in a positive way. So they grow with us in the past. We bring in new technologies. So we are seen as an innovation leader in the industry. So they challenge us too. So this is from the customer side. So they follow us. They see that our machines are now interconnectable, that we have software, that we have services. But with this, or having said that, is on the other side, they also challenge us. They would like that our digital solutions are faster than the rest of the market, that we have more seamless integration. So it's both sides. So they are following us, but they are also challenging us. And they are challenging us in the way that this is highly individual, because every small company, every small mom and pop shop is slightly different. So auto configuration, simple connectivity to make configuration of machines, simple understanding of which build standard is there. There are a lot of questions which we have to solve differently, because if we solve it individually, it's a nightmare in the brownfield at the end. So I would say that is an interesting topic. And on the other side, we have the big OEMs. So we deliver machine to the biggest automotive industry companies in the world, from the US over Japan and Germany. And there is IT security, all the knowledge you have to have on your services, on your services with interconnectivity, with data conformity, and all these aspects. So we have to balance both, which is, I would say, quite unique in management to see these two worlds and try to connect them into the development. Yeah.
Now, I'm not sure that your company developed it, but I'd relate it to your company, PaperPart. Can you share two words? Some of the listeners will know what it's about. Some maybe will not. And the reason I ask you here is that when I thought about it, is that maybe I thought, in addition to what you now told us, you know, you have two type of customers. Sometimes I thought maybe PaperPart could give you a potentially third customer. You know, it's the customer which needs a certain piece of metal, and needs a lot of it, and then say, okay, you just put the machine there. Can you just explain this in 2-3 words what PaperPart ideas?
Yeah, so in principle, it was the idea, and it is the idea that we get in a kind of a long-lasting partnership where we drive and we guarantee the outcome to our end customers. And it was one of the driving ideas. What I just mentioned is digitalization at the mom and pop shops is highly individual, and a lot of people have to make sure that the interconnect between production planning, price calculation for the part, and the production of the part itself is a digital ecosystem connected to a physical world. And we took this idea and drove it into a business model. So we said, okay, let's put the machine to our end customer. And at the end customer side, in the production planning team, the operator uploads a part on our website, on our ecosystem. We make a price guarantee. Then there is a download, and it is produced in his site. So at the end, we give a price guarantee on a machine at his company producing his part, but on our machine. And therefore, it is a long-lasting partnership.
Right. So it's more a contract on the basis of parts, maybe square meters of metal sheet, I don't know, rather than you offering them a certain price for buying a machine and keeping it up to date.
Yes, so it's a contract on an individual part. That is a good thing. And we give the guarantee, but we produce it on our machine at his site.
Very good. And for you to be able to do that, for your customers to be able to do that, you use OPC UA as a communication architecture. Now, how do you see the future of OPC UA and standards in general?
So I would say we are quite convinced that this will further develop and that we have to all together to work into this specification. And that based on the current development, that this will drive us to the next level, and especially in the new business models where we understand that there is more than having just the transport, but also having information and a certain kind of model of the data provided to understand, to get the connect the interdependencies, to understand the linkage. So it's one of the key drivers for a digital IT-OT ecosystem to have this interlinked. And therefore, I would say that is one of the key success drivers for the future.
So how about regards and OPC UA and the companion specifications? So specifically, you have been involved in this companion specification specifically. How was that? How was it developing, and how do you see that? How do you see the future of that? Do you see that, as you said before, is that typically also evolvement over time, or is that a more fixed thing?
No, it's for sure there is an evolvement over time. So if I compare it with my history of OPC UA and UMATI, so we sprinted every 3 weeks, and then over months together with other companies, and the standard evolved and the specification evolved over time, bringing the different views of different engineers and different expertises together and somehow specifically then write it down and agree on it in a certain global standard. And this will further drive. So we see that clearly in Germany, for example, there is a huge project now being funded, and we bring it to the European and then to the global level. It's Manufacturing X, where we try to connect UMATI, OPC UA, the idea of this specification, also with the data spaces, open data spaces to exchange and share data. So I would say it is continuous work, and also our OPC UA community and group is constantly growing over sites, over skills and competences, and therefore it will never stop.
And that's good to know. There's always something to do. Now, what I refer to, and that was the, I think you shared on LinkedIn, I went back a couple of months back, it was your announcement on, you say, OPC UA is a significant step towards interoperability, connectivity, etc. There was an interesting quote, and I believe you used that word before. Maybe you can talk about a little bit more, where you exactly specifically say that your USP is that you do not differentiate with regards to plug and play.
Yeah, so that is, I think the USP is that we don't USP in connectivity.
Right.
That is, I try to bring this on every of my keynotes. And we are also, beside UMATI and OPC UA Foundation, we are also part of OMLOGS, which is an open standard of localization in the industrial world. So I think I try to bring all my engineers and my decision makers into these groups and to drive standards and work on it. And I said it's the best investment of our company to bring the best engineers into these teams and drive the open specifications. Because if it's the best people doing it, it's the best of all companies. So I would say, therefore, it is an investment in future. It's the investment of the leading companies. I think standardization is a huge opportunity for all the companies who are willing to invest in R&D and technology, because they can align on the standards and then build the businesses further on. And therefore, that is for me one of the biggest advantages of leading companies working together in standards, and therefore making sure that not being driven by taking the burden of solving everything alone and then missing the market. It's better to align forces, agree on standards, and then focus on gaining market share. It's better invested.
That is a perfect close, unless I just want to give you that opportunity. There is some activity, some final thought that you, if you spend 2 or 3 seconds that you think, oh, we haven't addressed, feel free so.
I would say we addressed, we came very, very far and very into the details. So for all the experts who missed a little bit figures and facts, I would say I try to drive the community of experts, and I invite all the experts to work on it. And I would like to see myself as a consultant of other C-level decision makers and the politics to support the standardization in the industry, because it's one of the biggest assets I see we have in Europe. So that would be my invitation globally, that we would like to work together with all leading companies in the world, building these standards to make the world better. Because if we generate better factories, better machines, it's a smarter way to leverage the domain expertise we have and to build successful machines, and therefore have a lot of fun, because at the end, driving technology is what is my purpose, and purpose is linked to fun, and then it is a perfect combination.
That's an even more impressive close. I'm going to take away, though, the no differentiation in the end. You started with the disruption. In the end, you're going to say, have fun, which is an amazing thought. I told you I have a hard close in 2 hours, actually. I'm doing a official, what is it? Let's say I'm at a band, and we're doing 2 days, Saturday, Sunday. It's the first time I ever did this. And the person standing in front told us exactly the same. Something goes wrong, doesn't matter. Have fun. But at the same time, you give this great invitation to colleagues of the machine tools market to work together to together make things even better. Tom, thank you very much. If you, dear listener, want to learn more about other OPC UA companion specifications, other pieces of the technology, maybe you want to become a member of the OPC Foundation, you can listen to the preceding podcast episodes. You can also visit the website, or you can also write the OPC Foundation at office@opcfoundation.org. It was great to have you with us. I'm going to be having another couple of interviews, Ascentim, Microsoft, VTT, and others. It's great that you have been with us today. I'm looking forward to have you with us again. Tom, thank you very much for having been my guest today.
Thanks, Peter, for the invitation, and I'm happy to come again, latest if I have my English version available as an ebook. So thank you very much. Enjoy your day. Bye-bye.
Sounds great. Thank you. Bye-bye.